by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Cairo Knights, how are you, everybody? Happy Tuesday. Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Jonathan Weir. So excited to be with you tonight. I got Matt Butler back in the studio. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. You know what? I'm going to start off the show tonight with something that is just bad talk radio. Just god-awful talk radio. Because it's something that it's a story that, honestly, everybody should be happy about. It's something that, like, you read it, everybody. I honestly cannot imagine somebody hearing the story and finding something negative in it. And it's a local story, and it's actually something we talked about yesterday at this point. From MyNorthwest.com, family shares detail on how 10-year-old survived being lost in the Cascades for 24 hours. Now, if you remember from yesterday, there was a 10-year-old girl from Federal Way who was lost at the Cleelum River. That's how you say it, right, Matt?
Yes.
Matt made me second-guess myself yesterday. I'm new to the area. It's not fair. So here are the details on how the girl got lost, but this is a great story about a community coming together to help a vulnerable person. On Sunday afternoon, this 10-year-old girl from Federal Way was reported missing after hiking with her family in the Cleelum River Valley. Around 2 p.m., her extended family was near the Cathedral Pass trailhead on Fish Lake Road in the Cleelum River Valley, north of Cleelum. I'm saying this a lot now for someone who's still only 95% sure I'm getting the pronunciation right. While her family crossed the footbridge over the river to get to the trailhead parking area to eat lunch, they noticed that the 10-year-old girl was missing. Around 20 adults went back to look for her. As her family searched for nearly 2 hours, a passerby on a UTV offered the use of his Starlink phone at their cabin to call 911. Now, that's the first part that's amazing. Two things there. One, there are 20 adults searching. I'd assume at one point one of them was like, okay, I'm going to go somewhere and call for help so we can have the authorities come in involved in this. But one of two things happened. Either they're like, well, will they come out? I don't know. Because, by the way, this is an immigrant family from Afghanistan. Will they come out? Will they help? I don't know. Or they thought, I can't give up the search. I'm not going to abandon the search for this. What if we could find her? Well, fortunately, this person stepped in and said, no, come back to my cabin. You can use my phone. And they did, to call 911. Then deputies with the county launched an immediate search along with search and rescue volunteers. Volunteers across the state quickly joined the search and brought their resources. Then the next day at about 3 p.m., they found her alive with only minor scrapes. She had traveled 1.5 miles from where she was last seen, and she had gone down the west side of the river. A Snohomish County Swiftwater crew used their inflatable rescue watercraft to bring her to safety, where she was reunited with her father. There's a beautiful picture you can see on MyNorthwest.com of her, just her little frame in a gigantic life jacket being rafted back to her parents. She said she'd hiked downstream through the forest and spent the cold night between some trees. And she told rescuers that she thought it was the right thing to follow the river. That's just a smart little girl. That's everything in here in this story. United, look at this community. Look at this. And I know it's just the authorities doing what they're supposed to do. I know it's just a guy doing what he's supposed to do and offering the use of the telephone. But how often do we see stories where people are selfish, or where the authorities don't arrive in time, or where a child isn't lost in the woods, a child might be abandoned? This is a positive news story. And what a smart, resourceful little girl that went, you know what, I probably should stay near the river because will be the easiest place to find me. If only they had had her during the Blair Witch Project. And those idiots wouldn't have been killed by the Blair Witch. So it's Bad Talk Radio. I'm just saying, because everything in there unites us. That's not what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to talk about stuff like that. We're supposed to get on here and make you angry and be divisive. Talk about things that either you 100% agree with or things that you 100% don't agree with. But I was happy to share that story because we talked about it yesterday at the beginning of the show. And I was like, how did she get lost? Like, what happened? I wanted to know more details. And that's another good thing. They were forthcoming about it. It's awesome. Now, do I guess what passes for good talk radio? Certainly news talk. And it is a big story today, of course. The Seattle City Council failed to approve the new city drug possession law. I'm not going to get into this, to the nitgrit of this too much, specifically because I don't think there's any chance that they're going to not pass a new drug law. I don't think that they're going to allow decriminalization for the same reason I said this about the state back in May when it was like the Democrats couldn't, and they blamed Republicans for it, which was laughable considering the Republicans don't have that much power in the state legislature. But they were going to pass it. I knew they were going to pass it. They weren't going to allow there to not be any laws on the books regarding drugs because you just look down south to see what's going on in Oregon. It's not great. Especially Seattle can look at Portland as an example and see it's not great. When you do decriminalization, it just doesn't turn out that well. Because at some point, you do need to have the authorities involved in getting people to treatment. Now, obviously, the members of the city council that voted no on this are against it because they see this as you're just going to be shoving people into jail. You're just going to put them in cells. You're not going to get them the treatment they need because we don't have the resources for that right now. And that's the real tragedy here. Matt Butler, I think you tend to side a little bit with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at this whole issue is we have tried the war on drugs. It's made a lot of people wealthy fighting this so-called war on drugs. We haven't won. And until you address the root causes in society of why people are driven to do drugs, even if you provide harsh penalties for drug dealers, there is always going to be someone in the world for whom taking that risk seems more advantageous than staying in the situation, usually poverty, that they're in. So until you deal with the demand, you will never fix the drug problem.
So what is the cause of the drug problem? Poverty, it's disenfranchisement, it's stress, because it's not everybody.
I would say overwork and a lot of self-medication. I mean, you saw work-related, you saw in the Appalachians where people who had very painful, physically stressful jobs got hooked on opiates. I think we don't have enough mental health care in our society. It's not universal and easy for people who need it to access. There's a lot of poverty, which I think especially drives the crime behind drugs, because then when you're trying to get out of a situation, you start dealing. There's a lot of reasons, and it's such a complex and multi-layered problem, but I think that people don't really want to do the deep work. They don't want to dig into the nuances and really invest in people and their mental health and a lifestyle balance. Instead, we'd just rather fight a big and never-ending and very costly war.
Well, there's two things there. I think that you're right. You know, calling it the war on drugs, I think, is stupid. I think that we do so many things in the society. You can call this a semantic argument. I don't really care. But I feel like there's so many things that are well-intentioned in our society whose execution comes off poorly because the naming of that thing. Like just for example, Black Lives Matter. I'm 100% on board with Black Lives Matter. And I think everybody who goes, well, all lives matter. I think everybody who says that would not have that response if the movement was called Black Lives Matter 2. And I don't mean the sequel to Black Lives Matter. I mean Black Lives Matter as well. That's what it should be. That's what you should call it. Black Lives Matter as well, because that is what they're trying to say. So anytime somebody goes, all lives matter, it's like, yes, that's what they're trying to tell you. They're saying Black Lives Matter because all lives matter.
And keep in mind, too, we've only fought the war on drugs on certain fronts. We like to fight them where it's easiest, which is generally in impoverished and minority communities. We're not fighting the guys on Wall Street who do a little coke after work, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, back to my semantic point. I think that calling it the war on drugs is dumb. We should call it the war on addiction. I think that that's a better way to phrase it. Not the war on addicts,
yeah,
but the war on addiction, because yeah, that makes it into a mental health issue. That makes it into a health, public health in general issue, and that makes it a more effective and dedicated thing to fight. As far as your point about we don't care about the rich people who are doing drugs, I think that's true, but I think that goes back to your original point. Rich people can afford rehab. You know, I don't
many
care about
over
people on Wall Street. Yeah, doing bumps of coke because they can go to rehab anytime they want.
But the point
whereas
is, I always say, though, that the point that I'm making with that is people look at the very visible. They look at the homeless. They look at the ones who are really strung out. They look on those. Oh, that's a drug problem. They're not looking in the high rises.
Yeah. And they're not, because it's not as visible. And some people would argue with getting rid of, you know, making it so we're hustling the bums off the street who are doing drugs, in their words, that it's making it into a private concern where we're going to be driving them into a place where they're not going to be getting help, which would be their private homes. I think there's some truth to that, but I think the bigger problem we have is if we don't involve the authorities in some way, there's no way these people are ever going to get any kind of treatment, because unfortunately, the best we have in our society to deal with this right now, until we have better resources, more affordable rehab, which is probably not going to happen anytime soon, is forcing people to hit rock bottom. It just is, because there's a lot of people who otherwise would just keep doing drugs unless they were caught, unless maybe they spent some time in jail, unless they had some, I don't want to say severe consequences, but they had some consequences other than the personal damage that they're doing to themselves. I think of it this way. If you have a family member who is a drug addict, would you rather they be out on the streets, allowed to smoke as much fentanyl, do as much heroin, or whatever they're into, as they can? Or would you rather them be in a jail cell?
But look at countries like Finland. They've practically solved this problem. But the thing is, we don't want to put addicts into housing first, because we don't want to think that someone deserves something. We don't want to think that, oh, if we give them housing, we're pampering the terrible addicts. No, until people are housed and stable, a lot of them are not going to get treatment.
You know what's funny about that too, is I agree with you 100%. First of all, you can't mention a European country in this conversation, because you know what they have over there. This thing
healthcare.
Yeah, this crazy thing, this crazy concept of using our tax money to actually provide help to people. But on top of that, we are providing housing for them. It's called a jail cell. And
get into jails. That never happens.
Exactly. And that wasn't presented as an argument against you. That was an argument against the people who were like, well, we shouldn't give them a housing. We shouldn't give them a place. How much do you think it costs to put somebody in jail versus a tiny home? Because tiny homes are cheaper. It's been proven that they are.
Yeah, but if we did that, then we wouldn't be enriching a corporation that runs prisons. And that's the American way, Jonathan.
Why can't the private prisons get into the tiny home building, you know?
I don't know. Maybe they're sadists and prefer to run prisons.
Yeah, maybe. Well, we all know the answer to that, because it's slave labor, and that's something you get from running a for-profit prison. It's legalized slavery, everybody, because the 14th Amendment says you can do it with prisoners. It's awesome. So I don't know. I obviously don't think that we're going to not have a law on the books as far as handling people doing drugs on the street. I think, honestly, being cynical about this, some of this is just the Democrats and the city council just pushing not an agenda, but trying to maybe leverage this into getting more guarantees as far as rehab, community court coming back, those things are concerned. I don't think we're going to get to the point where we're just like, oh, it's a free-for-all out there. Because it's just not, that's not tenable. That's not something that anybody in the city wants, especially with the All-Star game coming in. Oh, boy. I was going to get into the gun talk, and I blew all my seriousness on that. So, I don't know. You know what I want to talk about? We'll talk about this coming up. Because it's a story I saw everywhere today. It's a story that went viral, and I love it. Because I really used to hate the person that's at the center of the story. And slowly, gradually over time, I found myself starting to love him. And that's weird for me. Because usually, I'm very stubborn in my opinions. It's hard for me to get to the point where I switch. I would like to be a more malleable person. But Pete Davidson is winning my heart. Pete Davidson's winning me over. And he might win you over, too. You heard what he battled the Kardashians. He's battled Kanye. He's battled drug addiction, which fits perfectly into the story we were just talking about. Now he's battling PETA. And how do you not like a guy who tells PETA off? So coming up, not only are we going to talk about Pete Davidson, Pete versus PETA, I'm just going to give you all the reasons you should hate PETA. If you aren't aware of them yet, I'm going to hook you up with those reasons. It is a mal odious. It's a Marilyn Manson there.
Heck yeah.
It's a mal odious organization that honestly should not exist for several reasons. And if you've ever felt that in your heart, well, I'm going to clarify it for you so that your brain can have it too. That is next on Car Nights. How you doing? My name's Jonathan Weir, and I have a confession to make. I am starting to really like Pete Davidson, and that's weird for me because I watched him on Saturday Night Live, and I, like most of you, hated him on Saturday Night Live. He had a breakdown in every sketch. He ruined every sketch that he was in. Then, out of that, he started dating these amazingly stunning, beautiful women, like, well, he was with Kate Beckinsale and Kim Kardashian and Ariana Grande. And it was just woman after woman. And I'm not saying he's hideous, but he's like kind of like a troll doll where it's like, I can't say it's cute, but it's not exactly, I don't know what it is. Is gnarled in its attractiveness a phrase that I can use here? Sure, why not? But I have to admit, I'm starting to like the guy. So there's a PETA executive, you know, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, named Daphna Nachmanovich. And she publicly expressed disappointment in Pete Davidson's decision to purchase but not adopt a dog. See, he went out and he did the dastardly thing instead of going to an animal shelter and getting a dog that had been abandoned or abused or whatever, like we're all supposed to do. Like I did. Pete went out and he bought a dog from a breeder. Well, Pete had his reasons for that, and he shares them here. on in just a second. I don't have it there. Oh my God. Hold on a second. Nope. How you doing? How's everything going? Why isn't this working? I don't know. Let's go with default. There. I'm sorry, my remote work is great. Nope. Still not working. Okay, fine. I have the voicemail. It's amazing. Here, you know what? I'll do it myself.
Hi, this is Pete Davidson. You, lady. I hate PETA and everything you stand for. The reason I had to buy that dog from a breeder instead of getting it from a shelter was because I'm severely allergic to dogs. And if I got a dog from a shelter, we'd have to take it right back because my eyes would be bleeding, my nose would be running. Also, we had a dog that my mom loved who just died, so I bought her a new dog because she was sad. You got a problem with that? Well, my, you jerks. Also, the King of Staten Island should have won an Oscar. Ew.
Anyway, sorry. I think that was better. I think that was better than the voice.
Excellent.
One.
Excellent job.
I summarized it pretty well. All right, so here's the thing. I hate PETA. And I am not somebody who is unsympathetic to what their cause is supposed to be. I actually appreciate the idea of people for the ethical treatment of animals. I'm not a vegetarian myself. But if we got to the point where you could replace the meat and everything like that with, if this plant-based stuff actually tasted good and wasn't also bad for the environment, I would totally switch over to that. I don't like the idea that some, you know, steer not only had to be neutered, but then had to be slaughtered for my consumption. I would still eat chickens, though. I would still eat chickens because chickens are evil. They're living dinosaurs. But here's the reason I hate PETA. PETA was founded by a woman named Ingrid Newkirk. And Ingrid worked at an animal shelter in Virginia, where she witnessed a lot of hostility and abuse towards the animals. And in an interview, she said that it bothered her so much that in the end, the abuse that she witnessed bothered so much, I would go to work early before anyone got there, and I would start killing animals myself. This is a direct quote from her. I would kill the animals myself because I couldn't stand to let them go through any more abuse. I must have killed a thousand of them, sometimes dozens every day. You know, that's the solution to animal abuse. Kill them all. Which is why I'm assuming PETA has one of the highest euthanasia rates of any shelter in the country, if not the world. They euthanize the majority of dogs and cats that they take in. These are their, and by the way, these are self-reported statistics. So these are probably worse because these are just ones that they're willing to admit to. They euthanize 57% of dogs and 73% of cats that are brought to PETA shelters. Other shelters, in case you're wondering, other shelters euthanize about 17% of dogs and 33% for cats. So PETA puts down three times as many dogs and two times as many cats as other shelters. Even if you, they claim that they take in more animals than other shelters. This is why. Because we take in the animals that other shelters won't. Which isn't actually true. The other shelters, public shelters have to take in animals. They have to take them in. And they still aren't putting them down. But even if that was the case, that still doesn't explain why you kill three times more dogs than any other shelter. Because you're not taking in three times more dogs. And you say, well, you know, they do so much good by bringing animal abuse to the front of the conversation so that we are talking about it. And I guess my question to that is, do they? Because it seems like they bring a lot of attention to PETA. They don't bring a lot of attention to actual animal abuse because they go so over the top that it's hard to take them seriously. They, in the past, they have compared farmers to Jeffrey Dahmer. They've branded parents who feed kids meat and dairy products as child abusers. They compare women to cows, and they've shown graphic images of pregnant women in cages. They've claimed chickens are as valuable as Holocaust victims. They attack Steve Irwin on his birthday, who, by the way, was much more of an animal rights conservationist and advocate than they ever have been. They compared the American Kennel Club to the KKK. They have claimed, without any scientific evidence whatsoever, that dairy products cause autism. And they've mocked survivors of abuse and rape by comparing them to cows being bred against their will. Back in 2014, they stole a little girl's dog and killed it. That happened. They were sent to this trailer park in Sterling, Virginia, where the owner had called them out and said, "Hey, I've got a bunch of feral dogs running around here." They saw this dog that was by a trailer, was not running around with the other feral dogs. In fact, it'd be a little weird for this dog to be feral, considering it was a Chihuahua. Not exactly a lot of crazy, stray Chihuahuas running around. Yeah, leaping out of purses, trying to find somewhere to stay. So they took that dog, the little Chihuahua, back to the shelter. And guys, they put it down that day. Because when the dad called about it, they went, "Oh, yeah, the dog's dead. That dog's dead." And he's like, "What do you mean the dog's dead? You have my dog, my daughter. That was a Christmas present for my daughter. You put it down?" And they went, "Yeah, we had to. We didn't have room for it at the shelter." And he's like, "Then why did you take it?" Funny thing about that is that was actually against the law. And they had a lawsuit, state of Virginia filed charges, because you are supposed to wait 5 days at an animal shelter before you put the dog down. But PETA went, "Ah, one day's close enough." Absolutely none of those things are done to convince you. None of those things are done to win people over. They are done to shame you. The killing of the dog, the comparing farmers to Jeffrey Dahmer, all that stuff is just done for the sense of moral superiority that PETA gets to carry with themselves for doing something about these animals. They're basically a bullhorn preacher on a sidewalk telling you you're going to hell. They're no better than that guy. But they make millions of dollars and they're tax exempt. That sucks. It's Cairo Nights. Jonathan Weir, how are you doing? Really happy to be with you tonight. Those of you with dogs, help me out here. 888-973-5476. Text in 888-973-KIRO. Last night, my dog Gordon, he's a lab mix. It's part like Shiba Inu. I think he's... There's also, what is it called?
So he's part the Dogecoin meme.
Yeah, he's part Shiba Inu, part Labrador, and part possum. He's a freak of nature. He's the squirreliest, weirdest, most anxious dog ever. And he gets weird at night. By the way, that entire last segment when I was talking about PETA and yelling about them killing dogs, I kept hearing him whining in the other room. But last night, I wasn't yelling about PETA. He comes in here and runs up to me, like, in the middle of me talking, and starts freaking out. And I'm like, "Go away, go away." And he goes upstairs and gets my wife, who comes downstairs and lets him out. He goes outside. She's like, he just had to go to the bathroom. And they're like, oh, whatever. Comes back in. He's still freaking out. He's still bothering me the entire time. So I have to shut the door to the little room that I'm in. So he leaves me alone. And I found him upstairs. And he's never done this before. Never once. Because he's a very sweet dog. He's very loving. But he also is very... I don't know if a dog can have social anxiety or privacy issues, but he's very private. He doesn't like to sleep with us. He doesn't sleep with any of the kids. He just sleeps by himself downstairs in the living room. I go upstairs, and he's sleeping on my six-year-old son's bed. And I go in. He's like freaking out. I honestly thought it was like a Timmy in the Well type of situation. I start losing my mind, worrying that something's wrong with my son, my six-year-old Finn. And I like wake him up and I'm like, Finn, are you okay? And he's like, what? So now I've traumatized him because as soon as I wake him up, the dog starts growling and freaking out on me because I guess like he was in a protective kind of mood. And I had no idea what was making him go so crazy. But here's what I think it is. I live in Boston, and for the first time, as long as I've lived here for be 4 years. It's going to be 4 years in a couple months. We've never had wildfires from Canada. We've never had the smoke from Canada come down. It's come close. It's been in like the Berkshires. It's been in New Hampshire and stuff like that, but it's never come down to Boston, but it did last night, and it was there this morning. So I'm kind of wondering from you guys that are dog owners or maybe cat owners. I don't know. Just text in 888-973-KIRO. Was he freaking out over the wildfires? Is my dog some kind of climate change activist? Is that what it was? Or did he just not know what the smell in the air was? I didn't smell anything, but he was losing his mind. It's like you hear about dogs freaking out before an earthquake happens. I thought something dreadful was going to happen all night because of that. Turns out, well, something dreadful has been happening for decades, and it's now just catching up with us. So, yeah. If anybody could text in 888-973-KIRO, let me know. Does your dog freak out over wildfires? Because I know we got them in Seattle. Not right now, but certainly most summers. Or was he just being a lunatic for lunatic's sake? Get some of those texts coming up. And we're going to be having a major discussion about cussing. That's next in Chiron.